so demanding.
So this is a long time seeing my old buddy Scott. We've been months, haven't we, without giving our listeners any treats and hearing us. laugh.
I keep on trying to get you to, you know, to settle down, and
it's been
do a little recording, but you're always
busy summer, man.
You and the wife are out there gallivanting on the.
We've been traveling. Just got back from a little break up in the northern Washington, right on the Sound. Got to see my first gray whale cruising right along in front of the condo, the hotel. Oh, but that was really a treat.
I didn't know Rosie O'Donnell lived up there.
Hey, ooh, we better cut that one out.
Yeah, either that or you're out there chasing that little white ball around, you know.
Well, yeah, that was today. Yes, so had to get in a little of that. Perfect weather right now in the fall for golf. It's awesome.
You didn't see Landis out there, huh?
Nope, saw his buddies and all the other golfers, all the other men's groups. So, and you've been, I take it, keeping up your gym regimen.
I had to visit with the doctor this morning, but I'm not going to get the blood test back for a day or so. So.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
We'll see. Well, he seems to think that I'm, you know, doing all the right things. So.
Well, good for you. Yeah. I don't know if I'd agree, but.
That's what I would tell anybody, you know, who's going through this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do your research.
All right.
Google is your friend. You don't want to.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, and you're keeping up your blogging. Good.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
In fact, that was one of our original intents for the podcast here until you came up with your blasphemy this morning. So,
Okay. Let's be right up present and current. Your post this morning was I think
the award-winning and
intent was fine, but I disagreed with you as far as how you quote Paul.
Well, you know, the blog post is out there now, and people read it; they're going to see it as truth. So
you seem to have your own edition of the scripture.
Well, that makes two of us.
I was throwing a little back at me. Yeah.
Yeah, I can throw a curveball every now and then.
Yeah. So your blog title was The Man in the Mirror, your post.
Well, we can pretty much tell who the, you know, the assumption there or what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Up until this morning,
mm-hmm.
my assumption was that Christ was in us.
Yes. Yeah,
but no, then your heresy was...
I chose to refine your thinking, just correct you moderately, and I'm not correcting as much as say offering you a little different perspective. Now you say if you look into yourself, you see Jesus, and technically yes.
Careful, Christ. Careful.
Christ is in us. All right. Colossians 1:27. He's in us.
And, so why is it we don't see him then?
But Paul says, and the verse that you were quoting, I just wanted to make sure you quoted it accurately. Paul says, at present time, we look in a mirror. And now you're saying, okay, looking in a mirror, I see Jesus. No, Paul says we don't see anything but an enigma. The Greek word is enigma. That means a distortion, right? So we're not seeing Jesus. We're seeing a distortion. Well,
what we see is we see the you know, the fleshly person.
Uh-huh. We're seeing.
If we have the knowledge and mm-hmm. we have the revelation,
mm-hmm.
we see beyond that person is to who they really are.
Yeah, but
I wasn't wrong. It was
no, technically you're not wrong, but the logic you were using wasn't quite fitting with what I think is the take a bow. So Paul's saying though that in the flesh we only still see a very dim, it's distorted picture of ourselves, and But then if you read the rest of the verse, he's saying, but then face to face. So for the present time, we still have finite, limited comprehension and ability to see beyond our, as we would say, the naked eye. And so it's very hard for people to say, well, show me Jesus. And all they can see is their own flesh and the weaknesses and issues that they have in their minds about who they are.
So then how are we supposed to show people or convince people that what Paul said was true?
We don't have to convince them. If they have eyes to see it, they'll see it too. And what you just said, you see Christ by faith. You don't see him by your physical eyes. This is the point we're making. It's not capable. We're not capable to see Christ as we normally would say or normally would view or observe things, because our eyes can't see beyond the physical.
Right.
And so everything we see is a distortion. Now, here's the other critical part of this. If we only see into a mirror, how is it possible for us to tell someone what we think is wrong with them when all we're seeing is ourselves?
Well, we can't.
And that's the problem that we don't realize. We are so prone to see faults in each other, but Paul's telling us, you're not seeing the faults in someone else. You're seeing only your own faults. Mm-hmm. That's why Jesus said, don't judge. You're judging yourself every time you make that criticism of somebody else, because your sight is limited by this bubble, if you will, that you live in. You can't see beyond that, and other people can't see through your bubble.
Well, yep, there's a reason why people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw rocks.
Yeah, wisely said. Yeah. So we do a lot of, let me put it in the form of a question. If we can't see beyond ourselves and that's all we see, then what happens when we're trying to be someone that isn't who we really are? Hello, it's crickets.
No, I've just got a couple of emails here, but
I see. You're multitasking. Multitasking.
Somebody I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they can obviously wait for you. But yeah. What isn't this the whole reason that people pretend? You and I want to be so badly someone other than the inferior, questionable, just lack of confident person that we see in the mirror, looking back at ourselves. We're not happy with that picture. And so then we begin to pretend and put on this psychosis, if you will. Psychosis, and psychologists would argue with me there that that's not the proper terminology, but because they say psychosis is something that you can't handle or help. Well, in a way, you are limited. You are unable to make any change in this view that you have.
So, well, in all of this training that I keep doing,
mm-hmm.
and people would say, "Well, that's good. You're making positive change. You know, mm-hmm. positive changes."
Right.
But am I really?
Well, the only way you know that is you have to test yourself or measure yourself in various ways.
Yeah, but if I'm looking at I'm looking in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
and all I'm seeing is a distortion.
Well, yes, because you still are critical of yourself. You're still looking at yourself as not worthy or not making it. You still are trying to strive and change yourself, right? Why do you go to the gym? You look at yourself and you're not happy.
See the girls.
Yeah, I know that's the real reason we know. Yeah. But isn't the reason you're there is to improve yourself? Because as you look at yourself, you're not happy with what you see. You want to change that.
Well, then we get down to the, you know, to the nitty gritty, to the basic question.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really honestly ever need to change ourselves or no?
Well, good question.
I know.
Are we able to change? Let me throw back that question. Is it within our capacity to make any significant change in our lives?
I wouldn't think so.
If we don't have a self, as we've talked before,
right,
there's no such thing as an independent self, then what are we trying to do? We're trying to manipulate a false self. And that's where the illusion or delusion comes in. And we keep looking in the mirror and we see that self that we want to be. And it's all, everything is confusion.
You might be getting a little bit, you know, too deep for people who are, who might see this.
Well, but isn't it true?
I realize there's only three or four people that actually watch these things. So
yeah, you'd be surprised. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Anyway, isn't this the reason people show up at the gym with you? Isn't that why you're down there?
Well, yeah, we want to make better choices, mm-hmm, and better, yeah, changes.
Sure. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's a certain amount of that that does improve our health and our general, right, well-being.
Yeah. But doesn't that come down to how we see ourselves?
Yes and no. The motivation is driven by the feeling and knowledge that we can be better and do better. Mm-hmm. And in many respects, as I said, there's nothing wrong with that. But when we start to talk about who we really are as an independent person and trying to change into that view or distortion, and it really is a diluted picture, oftentimes it's not really who we really are. God, the Father, is satisfied with who you really are right now. Now, again, that doesn't mean he's not prompting you to change things as far as your health and appearance. Those things, yes. But when we strike, think about, okay, I don't like me. I want to be a different person. All right. That's where we get into confusion. And what's happening with this generation of youth today, this perversion has settled down. You know, these kids are being educated. In fact, oh no, you can change your whole person. You can be who you always wanted to be, whether male, female, or whatever. And there's such gender confusion. You can be a pronoun. You can be whatever you like.
Well, what if I identify as somebody else?
Well, that's the issue. If you're thinking that you want to identify with somebody else, then you really are believing what you see, you know, your distortion in the mirror. You're trying to be different than God has made you.
Now, somewhere along the same lines,
mm-hmm,
what I wrote one of my pages this week about the fall from grace of one of, you know, another pastor that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, because we've had more than a few of these, you know, of these leaders,
mm-hmm,
falter in the same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my question is that as they're doing that, is that really who they are? Or are they, like you say, you know, believing in the lie that they're someone else?
Here's what I believe. And being somewhat, well, somewhat exposed to that lifestyle and that, mm-hmm, environment, the tendency is to get caught up in this idea that you are someone popular, that your life, your personality, your ministry is so much the desire and delight of hundreds and thousands, and you get swept up in this whole idea of, oh, how important, how popular, how successful I am. There's nothing more
you dangerous. You made a comment to me a few years ago, mm-hmm. When we were talking about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that, those times when you were on staff,
mm-hmm.
and you had to go visit,
mm-hmm.
Ladies, young ladies,
right?
Mm-hmm. Because of the same situation,
mm-hmm.
you always brought your wife Shirley with you.
Yes, yes.
And there's a definite reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. The world, the enemy is very tricky, and will use any maneuver or any possibility to degrade your integrity. And in effect, set up ambushes. And so you always had to be aware. You always had to be very, very careful. But and in the same way, I think the enemy is very tricky on how he draws these young superstar celebrity pastors into that role.
Yeah.
And it's almost, Scott, I liken it to kind of a chemical of choice.
Yeah.
So some guys go to alcohol, some guys go to drugs. And the reason they do that, that's the chemical of choice to mask the pain.
Hey, I want to be a rock star too.
Yeah. So you get into that and it just gives you this high, this rush, this wow, this importance. What it's doing though is masking deep inside the desire to be someone again, the confusion, the pain, the emotional hurt, whatever's going on in that real true soul, that down inside in a person's soul, in a man's soul, there's still, if he's not settled in this issue, like we've been talking about, of whose life he really is, and he's always vulnerable, always trying to find that person. And the rush of the celebrity is a chemical of choice. And it masks that. And deep underneath, those things that are still in turmoil have a way of finally coming out. And it's sad how they do. Reading of just recently, saw the documentary that's on, I think it's Discovery Plus. And it's the documentary of Hillsong, the church, Hillsong Church.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen that, but it's really tragic. In several cases, and one particularly, where Hillsong grew just powerfully, and their focus.
They exploded when they first came in, when they first came in the scene.
Huge. And it was pushed primarily through the whole musical. They had one of the most popular musical groups and producing music that people were just, some of the greatest worship music has been produced by. So that helped just really foster the explosion of the church. So then in one case, particularly when they planted a church right in New York City, they put a young man in there and he just quickly rose to stardom. He was becoming the pal to Justin, what is his name, Bieber, and other Hollywood types. I mean, he was in the glory. And then it crashed when one day it was revealed he was having an affair. And he finally, he admitted, and the whole church imploded.
Yes, yes. It's the old Jim Baker syndrome, yeah?
Well, yeah. And the other one that we've talked about, and I don't know if I've mentioned it here in video or recorded it, the tragic downfall of Mars Hill in Seattle.
Yeah.
And the young pastor, Mark Driscoll. Now, he wasn't accused of any moral impropriety, but his issue was just becoming such a powerful autocratic leader. You went his way or no way. He threw you off the bus, and the whole, before long, it came out that there was fraud. There was impropriety in terms of how the church was administered, and there were just gross mistakes made in terms of pushing themselves into arenas and doing it falsely. And it just, it all came down. And here again, pointing to a young man, Mark, Mark just gloried in that popularity. Thousands of people were coming to that church, and well, and they were expanding to more church campuses. I don't know how many thousands.
Now, what is
tens
that,
of thousands of people.
What does that have to say for congregations such as Rick Warren's congregation down in California?
Well, fortunately,
are we gonna eventually see something like that with?
Not necessarily. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen to all mega churches.
Right.
But the powerful forces are there. Rick Warren, as you mentioned, as far as we know, has not had any kind of, we'll say, laundry that's being exposed. I believe the man is very integrous.
Yeah.
And so
it doesn't mean that people aren't looking for things.
Well, they certainly, somebody would be. Yeah. And the enemy will use any chance he can. He's suffered some real tragedies, lost his son to suicide and some other things. And I think recently, he's finally retiring and he's done as far as being in that specter every Sunday and having that role. He wants to retire from it and turn it over to someone else. There's a huge pressure in it.
Yeah.
Huge. Thousands of people looking at him every day and the glory. And he's weathered it well. That's one of the churches that I think has probably survived the best in terms of growth and height and enormity and still being able to carry on. But these few, they're in the minority.
Yeah.
Okay. But again, the issue, I believe, goes back to what we're talking about. It's the problem is the temptations, when we get into those roles where we're not really who we are in a way. We're posing most of the time.
Well, you're right, because the role, you know, kind of like in a TV show or a movie,
mm-hmm.
the role kind of takes control of me.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. I can speak to personal experience, and I'll be very careful and not to name names, but I worked under a former pastor who was very had a very strong popularity in our local community and built an enormous big church complex and ministry. But I personally witnessed seeing the other side of that man as he expressed tremendous pressure emotionally. But the toll it was taking on him. Now, you wouldn't see it as he was in front of people. He was star. He was triumphant. But boy, if you saw him in the backstage, you look at him and it's almost like he's going to collapse. So you knew that this was taking a toll emotionally on him to keep this thing going, to keep the program, and any false move, the whole empire would crash. See, that's the kind of the problem. I mean, if you don't trip yourself up, the enemy will do it for you in a way, you know, and that's the temptation out there, because those empires have tremendous things at stake. The volume of indebtedness. Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that you bring up the word empire, because mm-hmm. I got in a little, a text conversation with a coworker of mine the other day, and for people who read my blog page, I've gotten into referring to the mainstream church as a system,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and instead of the church, right?
Yeah,
and that's simply because, I mean, I've been blessed to see both sides. You know, you exactly. and I have had conversations about your experiences mm-hmm. from that, yep. Mm-hmm. from inside the pulpit. And I've been blessed to, mm-hmm. to hear those stories and to hear what you went through.
Yeah.
You know, and drawing on a few of those stories, you know, that brought me to the conclusion that, it is a system.
And those systems become very, very costly.
Yeah.
the millions of dollars to sustain those empires. And when someone, as I watched that documentary where they interviewed the primary leader of Hillsong, can't recall his name right now, but the main leader who started that whole movement, and he admitted it was really a matter of saving the dollars. And it came down to not looking real closely at the integrity of some of his leaders that he'd put into place, like in New York, because he was looking at what the cost would be if he really had to pick a person like that out of that position. Well, it happened for him. And then also it happened in Dallas. I think the Dallas church had to, kind of went through the same scenario. So those things cost that empire hugely, the dollars. And so you've got money invested in buildings, people, manpower. Oh my goodness. Let alone say the utilities, the debt service on some of those places.
Knowing what I know now, excuse me, and what I've learned, if you're going into theology, mm-hmm. if you're going into pastoral ministry these days,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you better not be doing it, you know, looking to make decent money, because that is number one, it's the wrong motivation.
It is, Scott.
And number two, it's, you know, pretty much not going to happen, because that's not.
Mm-hmm. See, and I believe Paul speaks to this issue and why he chose not to be remunerated in many of the places that he went. He never looked, he'd rather go in and provide his own means than actually get support from anyone, because he knew this issue, this principle, that you become indebted to people and then the whole thing gets on the wrong basis. You're treated as someone only coming just to profit from what your ministry. You're just doing it because you're being paid. And that was the issue personally in a position, a paid position, professional position. You don't have the same perspective. You're always looking at, okay, I got to keep on my game here to keep employed. And if I don't do well, I lose my job. So that leads to all kinds of different motivations. You got to be stellar. You got to perform. You got to keep on task and keep popular with everybody. And that's not the motivation for ministry. You want to be just doing what you do because you love Jesus.
Wasn't that the same motivation from the system that Saul worked under before his conversion?
Well, I'm not too knowledgeable of the actual, if he was making or being paid when he was still working within the Jewish system as a Pharisee. Mm-hmm. I know the Pharisees were really well off. And I think that had to do with the way that the whole structure was set up in terms of how they got their portion out of the till, the monies that were brought to the temple. I'm sure they were, They had good dividends coming their way, but now
there was a reason that the Pharisees weren't that well liked by the general population.
Exactly. Yes. No. They were taking advantage of people, and preaching one thing and living the other. So
Jesus called them out more than once on
that. Oh yeah. No. Now whether Paul saw himself in his ministry as in it for the profit, I don't think you can see that. In fact, it's just the opposite from what I just cited. He didn't want to be at all motivated that way. He wanted to go simply as an ambassador for Christ into these cities, and to preach without any motivation of being paid. Now, he wasn't opposed to people being paid for it, because he said the ox is worthy of the, you know, the oats, the things the ox is treading, workers worth his hire. So he wasn't opposed to that, but at the same time, he wasn't letting that be his motivation.
Right.
Okay. So how, as a person who gets into the ministry, a professional ministry, here again, oftentimes I have found these people, mostly men, as my generation, get into it from the standpoint, oh, this looks like a great career. I think I'd be happy in this career. Yeah, I'd like to do something that is seen as very, very spiritual, right? And so that's what makes the pastorate, the profession of being a pastor, very attractive. But then, yeah, unfortunately, what a lot of guys have recently found is that, oh my goodness, the pressure, the demands, and all of the things that go along with being a professional paid person, you're constantly under scrutiny, you've got to measure up. And a lot of guys, for other reasons, can't keep people happy politically. This last generation or swath, not only with COVID, but the politics have taken down lots of young men because they can't fight the divisiveness in their congregations. Yeah. And they're done. I don't want it anymore. So we have to be really aware of what our right reasons are for going into any position, let alone the pastorate. As I've learned, if you are trying to be someone that you have this desire or image of that you think people will be, how they will like you, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. But isn't that indwelling in all of us? Is we have that need to be accepted?
Yes, there you go. I fully agree. I think that's one tenet of it. We need this acceptance. We need affirmation. And so we try to change our image to get more of that. And all of this because we're not seeing ourselves as we really should be seeing. And the part that, as Paul says, we see only in part. We're so limited. But then, he says, we will see face to face. Now, what's that then? What does he mean by then?
He doesn't give a time frame as far as, but wouldn't that be after Christ returns? Or
I don't think so. I think he talks about in the next letter, Second Corinthians.
After we expire.
Well, in some ways, yes, we're finally released from the bondage of our own eyes and our physical comprehension or finite comprehension. And then, wow, then we get to see. And
yeah,
but I'm thinking there's the ability to see before that, even before our physical death. Because if you read in 2 Corinthians, in 3rd chapter 18, now there is freedom. Now, the Lord, Spirit of the Lord, there is freedom. Now we all with uncovered face, mirroring the Lord's glory. Now, what is it? What is uncovered face? See, again, right now our faces are covered. We're seeing only as a mirror. We're seeing there's a barrier there.
Right.
But that barrier is slowly taken away, if you will, progressively, if you will, as more and more we are determined to see Jesus. So what is he saying here? There is uncovered, mirroring the Lord's glory, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, even as from the Lord the Spirit. What does this transformation?
Well, what I think our knowing, our knowledge of him is what's the transformation.
Well, but doesn't life have enough things about it? Challenges, problems, circumstances beyond our control, traumas. In each of those, isn't there, what is happening when, even as Paul said, as he was buffeted in his body, it only showed his weakness. It only showed more of Christ. The more he was buffeted in his mortal body, the more the opportunity for Christ could be seen.
Yeah.
All right. So you and I have a circumstance, a tragedy, a challenge, and we come through that challenge. And lo and behold, we don't realize it. But in effect, as you said, our hope that we are going to show the image of Christ, that becomes more materialized, that becomes more seen. I see Christ in you when you are at your worst, when you are the most vulnerable and the most honest. That's where I'm seeing Jesus. And hopefully you're seeing it in me as well. Didn't that make sense?
Yeah, and at some point, from what Paul is saying here,
mm-hmm.
those blinders are taken off,
mm-hmm.
and we're able to see
yeah.
who we really are.
Mm-hmm. Little by little, the veil, it says, now we all with uncovered face. Well, yeah, he's not saying that's... But somewhere our face becomes more uncovered. And as he said in the first letter, in 12th, 13th chapter, where we see him, where we see Jesus. Now, when we see Jesus, that's an interesting... Here's what happens. Mirroring the Lord's glory. So, if you will, I'm proposing here, this is what I think it means. As our eyes are open, the veil is being pulled away, right? The human mm-hmm. tendency, the distorted division or the confusion we have of ourselves, but is that is being pulled away through life circumstances, God's working in us and the processes we go through. That veil is being removed and we get to see him. But what happens when we see him? What is Paul saying? His face is like a mirror.
Yeah.
And mirrored back to us.
We see him face to face.
His glory. Yeah. So that's where we get to see, oh, yeah, Jesus, you are there. And going back to what initially you proclaimed, I know Christ is in me. And this is who I really am, which is true, see? But
how are you getting to see that?
I'm sorry.
How can we honestly say that if we can't see him?
That's the whole issue.
Is it only knowing in our heart that he's there?
We by faith, right?
Yeah.
We don't live by sight. This is what Paul also says. We don't live by sight, we live by faith.
Yeah.
So faith is evidence of things not seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
The evidence of things not seen. In other words, you have something in your spirit that you know is true. I can't see it. I can't prove it logically, but I know it.
Yeah.
Your knower in you says, Christ is in me. I'm really Jesus. And that's true. That's what God says. But the visibility of that, the seeing of that in life is not there yet. Little by little, we get that veil removed and we get a peek of, oh, Jesus, I see you in this. And you're showing me who I really am.
I think, at that point, we see the other dimension.
Yeah.
That we're right now, you and I aren't privy to.
Right.
That is definitely there. That other dimension being being heaven,
mm-hmm.
being, those who've gone before us.
Right.
My mom, your parents.
Yeah, exactly. But where is that dimension?
It surrounds us.
It surrounds us in us.
Yeah.
Are you a spiritual person?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then you have all of those things that are spiritual in you. Heaven, the glory of God, all of the throne of God, he says is all in you.
But our faces are still veiled.
They're veiled. And the
so
veiled,
we can't see.
Right.
We can't see what's on mm-hmm. the
And
other
only
side.
As God pulls back the veil for us, little by little, are we able to see who we really are. Until then, we have to trust and go on the basis of what you're saying. See, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying in your post. I wanted to help understand how that process works. Because when we say, I know who I am, explain that more. And this is what I'm simply trying to do is unpack that a little bit more for your listeners?
I think it's already been revealed, you know, on certain occasions, selectively.
Right. Yeah.
Remember the? Do you remember the movie Happiness for Real?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The little, you know, the little kid who
sure,
you saw Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's plenty of evidence out there, mm-hmm, about what people call the supernatural.
Absolutely.
About seeing, you know, seeing their parents,
mm-hmm,
you know, seeing their loved ones who, mm-hmm, had passed away years before.
Sure, sure.
And yet they, you know, they're visible to them for, mm-hmm, a short period of time.
And you and I have both had, we might say, Jesus sightings or heaven sightings.
Yeah.
Regularly. You probably had some this week where something occurred to you and it just, that's interesting. Or that's something that just rung, whether it was somebody said something to you or something was offered to you or something happened for your favor or not, whichever, but you understood in your spirit, whoa, that's Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there is also, and I've experienced this a few times, you know, since my mom's passed away.
Mm-hmm.
You know that feeling, then you and Shirley share that feeling.
Yeah.
Where if she's in the same room, mm-hmm, you can just feel her presence. You know she's there.
Yeah.
And I've had that same feeling.
Oh,
with the same feeling that I had when I was with my mom.
Sure. Okay.
So I know somewhere,
mm-hmm,
that she's still alive. She's still living.
Well, yeah. And this is all the mystery, isn't it? In the spirit realm, mm-hmm, which we don't fully understand, we can't. Our finite comprehension, our mind can only go so far. We have to have these revelations. We have to have this comprehension coming into our spirits, not our minds, but in our spirits, the eyes of our understanding being opened, you see. We might be able to comprehend the heights and depths and width. We can't do it through human eyes. We have to have the eyes of our spirit, our heart, as Paul says, really, really open to it. So, and here's the other, the real kicker. In that First Corinthians 13, Paul is saying, at present I know out of a part or an installment, yet then I shall recognize according as I am recognized also. This is a concordant literal. In other translations, I will know fully as I am fully known. Now, isn't that something worth looking forward to? I want to know fully as I'm fully known. I want to recognize how I've been recognized.
How does God see it?
That's it. If I could see through God's eyes how he's looking at me and what he's seeing, what is he seeing of you, Scott?
Well, the way that God looks at me is totally opposite of the way that the world sees me.
Ah, guaranteed. Guaranteed.
I'm his creation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm created in his image.
Yes. He's looking at himself in you. I created this to be an image that I can look at, mm-hmm, and see me. This is God's desire.
Yeah. Right?
And so if he wants to see himself, you know that it's got to be the best work. it is not created in any brokenness or inferiority or whatever. It's the most beautiful thing. And cherish.
You have to understand that everything that we see in this world,
mm-hmm,
is perfect.
Well, I don't know quite what where you're
going. Wasn't the world created by him?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And everything was good.
Yeah.
Okay, that I agree.
Until man came along.
Yeah, everything was fine until man made that choice.
Well, yeah, the choice that man made was to start voting Democrat. That's when it all went down. Yeah.
Here we go again. Sorry, audience.
No, it's not anything that I haven't heard before. It does have
now
some
you
truth
let it out. now
this has some truth to it.
Now we just lost half our audience right there.
But no, I mean, why would God create something that he doesn't enjoy looking at?
Oh, I agree with you. He what is that phrase we've heard? God makes no junk.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what my mom used to say.
Yeah. God don't make any, is it? God doesn't make any, I forget how it's said. God doesn't make any, don't make junk or something. Anyway, but the point is he delights in what he's seeing because it's good. He looked at all of his creation and it was good. It was pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when man made the choice, the fateful choice of seeing God from a different lens, that brought a curse on creation. And yeah. Everything that was good now was shrouded under the curse and subjected to vanity. That's what the Bible says. It was subjected to death.
But hasn't that curse been removed now?
The curse legally has been removed. But creation still lives under that vanity, that shell of vanity, until it's able to see, as Paul says in chapter 8, verse 21, until the creation sees God in the sons of God. In other words, he's manifested through the sons of God. Creation then is liberated. Oh, it finally sees, finally understands, back to its original concept or perception.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you and I in Christ have that perception being restored to us. If we will see with eyes of faith and not let the mirrors not go by what we're seeing in the mirror. You go by truth. That's why in your post, you're saying, yes, I refuse to let the world tell me how I look. Or myself, how I look. I am Christ, and I'm being looked at through his eyes as a beautiful creation, a son, a daughter of God, who he cherishes, he loves, and is delighted with. But how many people know that? How many people fully grasp how wonderfully they are perceived by God?
It's not how the world sees you. It's how God sees you.
And knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
So which way are you going to judge your appearance or your image? You're going to judge it through what you in your finite comprehension and your own little soul, fleshly soul is telling you, or the world is telling you? Or are you going to say, no, God sees me as good. God sees me as cherished. Love.
Well, unfortunately, the constant message that we get bombarded to us, day in and day out, mm-hmm. is the message of the world.
Yeah. Well, media's job is to always tell you how badly you're making your choices and you need something better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or somebody else has, we have the answers, so listen to us.
Yeah.
Right. And so media is always biased.
There is a reason why one of the identities that's attributed to Satan is the accuser.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is to throw fault at us.
Yeah. So the news, social media, the news tends to be always negative because that's what our soul seems to feast on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I want to know how bad you are. That makes me feel better. I know somebody is worse off than I am.
Look how popular these reality TV shows are.
Oh, that's
right. It's
most of what, honestly, it's most of what I watch anymore. I watch a few films here and there, but I sure enjoy reality where people are, now, yes, some of it must have been scripted sometimes, but you get to see in stories, people in their own life story. It's not necessarily made up. This is what they're living, how they're interacting with the world, what they're doing for a career. That's fun, just watching some other people's stories.
There's a History Channel carries this one. There's one out there, a series called Alone.
I've not seen that.
What it is, it's a survival show.
Yeah.
Where this group of five or six people are all dropped off at different locations. Mm-hmm. So no one person is there with another person. And they're dropped off at different locations with only a few select items they can bring with them.
Mm. Okay.
And they have to make it for, like 30 or 60 days.
Wow.
Just by hunting and, gathering up in the land or if they're near water, mm-hmm. getting fish from there. And
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's far more interesting to follow that than what we often find is a made up story. It's pretend, right? And that's what most of us have learned to do very well, is pretend. Because we have to, because what we see in the mirror isn't really what we are satisfied with.
Well, remember what I mentioned earlier, is that there is that deep-seated desire in all of us to be accepted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we go against the grain, if we mm-hmm. go against that grain,
yeah,
we're not going to be accepted by those people around us.
Yeah, isn't what you do and I do a lot of times is motivated by what I want others to think, how I want to be accepted?
Yeah. So think about that the next time you respond to one of my blog posts. Just remember, I'm watching.
Yeah, I do. I'm watching you too. I love reading your stuff, and I don't mean to be a critic. I think for great, great platforms for continued discussion and interaction. None of us have the full truth, but we can share with each other and find that truth as Christ speaks to each of us through each other. And that's,
I think I did pretty good this morning for a first shot.
Yes, it was. And you've mentioned this theme before, and it's a great one. And it's your story. And it's what's coming out is your story. You are seeing Christ more and more as who you really are. Mm-hmm. Your human eyes have seen one thing, but you are refusing to believe what they see, and you're seeing rather what's in your spirit, and that's Christ. As you're fully known.
Dennis Dierdorf, as you sit before me, and as everybody listens in with anxious anticipation.
In my formerly doctrinally stained hands.
Give us an update on your book.
Oh, the book. Yes. Right now it's in the process of being converted into ebook. And I don't know if others have this challenge, but I find it it's not easy. It's time consuming getting it all correct in terms of the font and spacing and in the right place. So, but it's coming, and I'm 3/4 of the way done in getting it into the ebook form. And as soon as that's there, it'll be on Kindle, and we'll make an announcement. And then I'm not sure if when or how soon a print version will come, but getting it in ebook form is one of the first ways to get it ready to get into print form. But if anybody wants a print copy, it's in PDF and available, just let me know. I'll be happy to send the PDF form. You can read off of your PDF, Acrobat Reader, whatever.
You must have found a pretty important person to write up the foreword for your book.
Yeah, I don't know yet how I'm going to pay that gentleman for all, you know, for the kind words.
That debt's already been paid, brother.
Oh, well, all right. I'm glad to hear that. Well, all right.
I'm sure I'll get a lunch out of it in some future
day. I'm sure you will. I appreciated you saying the kind words. And being, Scott, your testimony came very, very, I'll say not handy, but it was very appropriate is for me to refer to as a confirmation of what we're saying, Christ living in us as us.
All the salacious details.
There, yeah, well, that aside. All right, my friend, well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, I've got a couple more things to tackle before I can call it a day. But
all right.
Well, we'll get to it.
Good enough. Just and
you go back go to chasing that little white ball around a little more.
I've done that enough for this week now. Maybe I'll get two next week. We'll see. All right?
All right, Dennis. But
take care. Thanks for your time, man. Good talking to you. All right. Take care.